hard-hitting medical truth, cutting through conflict and confusion to the understanding you're searching for. Join Dr. Peter McCullough, world-renowned medical expert and practicing physician, for this edition of the McCullough Report. Your life may depend on it.
Let's get real, let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report, and I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. It's been another hectic week in the news cycle with so many developments with respect to COVID-19 and the health of the nation, really the fate of the world in the hands of what's happening with respect to the natural respiratory infection, as well as the mass vaccination program. So I have many updates for you, and I want to go through them carefully and make sure that we're citing the literature and giving you information, and certainly you cannot be accused in any sense of providing misinformation. The first update is a paper that's appeared in preprint by first author Fiona Havers, and the title of the paper is COVID-19 associated hospitalizations among vaccinated and unvaccinated adults aged greater than 18 from the COVID-NET. Now, this is a partial report from 13 states from January 1st to July 24th. It's important to know that the CDC does not have a handle on all the hospitalizations in the United States. It never has. One of the first papers I published in Reviews in Cardiovascular Medicine in 2020 on the pandemic was really a demand, a public health demand, that we have a national hospital census of who's being hospitalized with COVID-19. And to this date, our CDC has not delivered on getting information to Americans on those who have been fully vaccinated. But this paper has 21 authors and is authoritative. So let's go through it. The main finding is in a table on page 23, where it gives the rates of vaccinated and unvaccinated individuals hospitalized with COVID-19. Now, importantly, there's no information on early treatment. Now, we know early treatment is the most important determinant of who's hospitalized and who's not. The authors are oblivious to early treatment, showing really kind of the blunderous approach that CDC officers and academics have to COVID-19. They really don't understand what's going on. If the illness is not treated early, then there is a risk of hospitalization, but yet there's no mention. Having said that, they focus on who's vaccinated and who's not. And the trend was as follows. In January, the number of fully vaccinated individuals that was admitted to the hospital from this 13 hospital consortium was only one patient. Now, that number has risen from one patient to 321 individuals in the month of June. And in the month of June, that represented 16% of those hospitalized were fully vaccinated, and 23.4% were partially vaccinated, that they should have had some partial protection from the vaccination program. So you can see these numbers have risen dramatically. What's happened from January to June is we went from a field of different strains, maybe 12 to 14 different strains. The most predominant one in January was the British or Alpha variant, but it wasn't dominant. It potentially was up to a third of cases. To now, June, July, August, and we're into September, that we have a superdominance of the Delta variant. In fact, the Delta variant may now be close to 100% of cases in the United States, and this is a product of mass vaccination, allowing a dominant variant that is resistant to the effects of the vaccine to move forward, and that's in fact what's happened. And so the data suggests that in June, and probably as we move into July, August, September, the percent hospitalized who are fully vaccinated continues to advance to a proportion that's going to match the population percentage of vaccinations. What does that mean? It means basically the vaccines have failed. And this is an admission by the CDC in their own manuscript that we have a situation where the vaccines have failed to protect Americans against an important outcome, and that is hospitalization with COVID-19. I want to follow this up with another report on the CDC webpage And the title of the report is COVID-19 Vaccine Breakthrough Case Investigation and Reporting. Hospitalized or fatal COVID-19 vaccine breakthrough cases reported to the CDC as of August 23rd, 2021. Remember that, again, this is voluntary reporting up to the CDC. It's nowhere close to being representative of what's going on in the United States. But I want you to be aware of this. These are fully vaccinated individuals. That means they receive shot number one and shot number two of messenger RNA. They get a two-week waiting period, and then they are declared fully vaccinated. They receive one shot of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, again, wait 2 weeks and are fully vaccinated. The number of deaths of those fully vaccinated are 2,063. The number of hospitalized, non-fatal hospitalizations, 8,987. Of the deaths, 87% were over age 65. Of the hospitalizations, 70% were over age 65. So we have a situation where our most vulnerable individuals who we really would want to vaccinate, those over age 65, if we had a safe and effective vaccine, those are the ones where the vaccine is clearly failing them. So we have a crisis on our hands. We have a crisis on our hands of vaccine failure. We had a situation that occurred on a Monday several weeks ago where the U.S. FDA granted continued emergency use authorization of the COVID-19 Pfizer vaccine and gave conditional approval to a separate legal entity and potentially a separate medicinal compound, the BioNTech vaccine called Comirnaty, and that approval was conditional upon doing multiple post-marketing studies on vaccine safety, particularly with respect to myocarditis. Well, what's happened with that set of actions? So non-approval of Pfizer and continuation of the EUA, and then conditional approval of BioNTech Comirnaty done on August 23rd, 2021. Well, what happened out of that was a created false talking point that Pfizer was FDA approved, which it wasn't. There still is no FDA approved vaccine in the United States. That false talking point even went up to the level of the President of the United States and was emanated out by a variety of press agencies. It was used as fuel to force more vaccine mandates on unwilling workers who do not want to receive the vaccine, given their concerns over safety and the risk of death with the vaccine. And then we had an announcement recently by Dr. Marion Gruber. Dr. Gruber is the director of the Office of Vaccines Research and Review, Center for Biologics and Evaluation of Research for the FDA, the senior person who signed the approval letter for BioNTech, and Dr. Gruber announced with the agency after 32 years and head of the Pivotal Review Board for over a decade that Dr. Gruber was resigning. Additionally, Dr. Phil Krause, also a senior person at the FDA related to vaccines, is also resigning. So these are important developments, and I think historians will record this and understand that we have a clear-cut regulatory malfeasance. We have clear-cut false messaging of information to the public, in a sense, propaganda. That's promotion of false information on an important topic of public interest by those in position of authority. And the vaccine program has continued to be steamrolled on Americans. Now, there's a large proportion of Americans now in the next 2 weeks that have their jobs on the line. They have school on the line. We are going to see what the backbone is of Americans in terms of accepting an injection of a vaccine, that the vaccines clearly are not sufficiently effective to promote in clinical use outside of voluntary administration. And they're clearly not safe. And we've reviewed the safety numbers many times on the program. We know that deaths and hospitalizations are unacceptably high after the vaccine. And these numbers continue to skyrocket over time. So many expressions of this are starting to come out in the popular culture. And I wanted to share with you this recent song that came out by Eric Clapton, who was a outspoken self-admitted injured person from the ill-fated COVID-19 vaccine program. So let's roll Eric Clapton and see what he has to say regarding COVID-19 and the mass vaccination program. And it's really critical link to what is an attempted takeover of America and the world with totalitarian.
Enough is enough. I can't take this BS any longer. It's gone far enough. You wanna claim my soul? You'll have to come and break down this door. I knew that something was going on wrong when you started laying down the law. I can't move my hands. I break out in sweat. I wanna cry. Can't take it anymore. This side's gotta stop. Enough is enough. I can't take this BS any longer. It's gone far enough. You wanna claim my soul? You'll have to come and break down this door. I've been around a long, long time. Seen it all, and I'm used to being free. I know who I am. Try to do what's right. So lock me up. Throw away the key. But this side's gotta stop. Enough is enough. I can't take this BS any longer. It's gone far enough. You wanna claim my soul? You'll have to come and break down this door.
So you're gonna have to come and break down this door. Let's hope it never comes to that. But what Eric Clapton is referring to is the specter of forced mass vaccination of an ineffective and unsafe vaccine on a population that knows that's the case and is doing anything to avoid this dreaded outcome of taking an injection of a gene transfer product that has not had sufficient testing. We really don't know the long-term implications of these injections whatsoever. But the one thing that's clear is we know immediately now they're not sufficiently effective, they don't work, and we know they're not safe. So Eric Clapton thinks enough's enough, and I agree. Well, Eric Clapton has inspired others to express themselves through songs and through ballads. And through this difficult time in America, I think we will also have artists that will come forward and start to express themselves as they relate to what's going on in the world. It is a unique and special time in the world, and I want to introduce another artist, not Eric Clapton, but a good guy, Jack Desbois, on the back deck of his house with his family listening. Let's listen to Jack just for a second on what he has to say through ballad.
Hello, my name is Jack Desbois. And I'm out here on the back deck with my family, sharing some songs. This song is a protest song, and it's dedicated to all those who are defending our medical and health freedoms and living not by lies. Thank you for your courage. It's called Waking Up. I was lying in my bed, waiting for the day to start, waiting for the sun to get me on my way. And I waited and I waited, and while I lay and waited, that old sun, he set upon another day. And through the curtains I could swear I heard him say, freedom doesn't come in a can. Liberty won't lead you by the hand. Nor lecture series guarantees the key to living life. There's no magic pill to make you make a stand. Freedom
freedom doesn't come in a can.
So from Eric Clapton and Enough's Enough to Jack Dubois and Freedom Doesn't Come in a Can, what we're hearing from really from artists all over the world is that they understand something is wrong. Something's going wrong. The apex of this problem is a medical situation. It's a respiratory illness where people are falling ill. There is a confusion and the agony and the despair of the consequences of the respiratory infection, the ineptitude and the nihilism of the medical response, the horrors of isolation and death, which continue to sweep across the world, and now really just the frightening specter that the single and only approach worldwide to the problem is to accept injections of gene transfer technology that are purported to be vaccines, but against people's will, or coerced with extreme coercion to the point of job loss, to the point of, in some countries, losing healthcare coverage and insurance, in some cases, losing entire careers, dishonorable discharge from the military. And as this agenda basically advances over the country and over the world, we just have an extraordinary situation that's evolving, and it's in the open. The individuals at the FDA and the CDC and the NIH are complicit and involved, and it's just in the absolute open for all to see. I mentioned Dr. Gruber, who signs the conditional approval for Pfizer's BioNTech's partner, Comirnaty. This is a product of 30 micrograms of messenger RNA per injection that's obviously failed. The Israeli Health Ministry has vaccine efficacy at 39%. A paper from a large study done by Piranak and colleagues, Mayo Clinic in Boston, has a Pfizer vaccine efficacy at 42%. The vaccine booster program has been announced in less than a year. We have a vaccine that has less than 50% efficacy, need for boosters within a year. That's the definition of a failed vaccine. That's a vaccine that's not viable. And how the FDA can move forward in a rushed fashion and keep Pfizer at least going through the emergency use authorization process and then give Comirnaty this conditional approval, and then have the person who signs the letter exit the FDA within a week is stunning. And that's on the backdrop that Dr. Stephen Hahn, the former FDA commissioner who oversaw really disastrous FDA messaging that never was updated on hydroxychloroquine, stating that hydroxychloroquine should not be used to treat COVID-19. That message was given in 2020 with no update, no evidence review, no further consideration. It was a full stop. Hydroxychloroquine should not be used. Well, Stephen Hahn had left the FDA after that and took a position with Flagship Pioneering, which is a venture capital firm that provided the seed funding for Moderna. And that venture capital firm, as far back as 2009, was funding Moderna and remains one of the company's biggest investors. Moderna stock has jumped 20-fold since the beginning of the pandemic, thanks to the vaccine. The only product the company has is the COVID-19 Moderna vaccine in its 12-year history. To make matters worse, before Stephen Hahn was Dr. Scott Gottlieb. Scott Gottlieb, who is a frequent contributor on CNBC, just as I'm a frequent contributor on Fox News. I'm older and more published than Scott Gottlieb, and certainly have more academic punch power in COVID-19 than he does. But he's a bright young man. He has joined the board of directors of Pfizer. Pfizer has over $10 billion in profits from COVID-19 vaccine alone, making it the biggest drug introduction in history, as the governments had guaranteed purchases and provided most of the money for the development and marketing and advertising for the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine. So we have an extraordinary situation of conflict of interest. It's clear that our government agencies are working in close connection and close personal connection with the leaders between the organizations, and they're moving from one organization to another for personal profit. And there appears to be no outrage from Americans, no mention of this as something that's concerning. And I can tell you, certainly I'm outraged. I know that I fill out hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of conflict of interest forms. And I do, and I have received funding as a consultant to PhRMA and chairman of data safety monitoring boards and review boards and principal investigators. That's all fine and legitimate. Academic physicians work as consultants to big PhRMA, big technology, and to drug and device interests. But it's all done above board. We have a reporting of this through a variety of sources. But this idea that we're going to work closely to one another and actually just change employment after a lot of government work that really has paved the way as a government official, allowing that product and that government funded effort for the biopharmaceutical company to move forward, and then go ahead and join the interest that you've helped, is crossing a line of conflict of interest that I think everybody should be concerned about. And you can understand really what's going on through a lot of that Foxon work that Eric Clapton and Dubois and others are doing. I think we're going to see a lot more of this as we move forward. Well, we have a terrific program for you this week on the McCullough Report, and I wanted to introduce our guests. Our first will be Dr. Eleftherios Goukalos, and he is a PhD at the University of Texas in the Rio Grande Valley. He's going to give us an update on his perceptions of what's going on in the academic environment of a university that's down near the border of Mexico, very southern tip of Texas. Give us his insights on what's going on. He's been very involved in the pandemic response and assisting other academic physicians with his review of the data and search of the literature. Many of us now have reviewed thousands and thousands of reports, and we have formed opinions, and our opinions are frequently sought across the world and sought by major entities, government bodies, non-government bodies, the media, as well as academia. And it's just natural at this point in time, without seeing teamwork, without seeing formal boards of external advisors guiding the pandemic response, that individuals will move forward as citizens and as academicians and provide analyses and opinions with respect to the pandemic. Our next guest is really interesting. It's the first time I've done it, and I love your feedback on it. And he is going to remain anonymous. His name is CC, Concerned Citizen, and he's going to give us a report from his high-rise condominium in Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam. And he's going to tell us what's going on the ground in Vietnam. I had reported recently on an outbreak in a Vietnamese hospital that was published in Lancet, where workers were locked into the hospital once COVID-19 started to spread. They couldn't leave the quarters. And there was an outbreak of 69 healthcare workers with the Delta variant, and they were carrying massive viral loads, 251 times the viral load of those with other variants from the pre-vaccinated era. And I wanted to ask him what is going on, and you can just listen to him. There's no window to the outside world right now. You can't turn on the major media and get a report from any city outside the United States, let alone a citizen who's really willing to tell you what's going on the ground, what can he do, what can he not do in this state of lockdown, fear, desperation, all centered on receiving an unwanted, unsafe, ineffective, genetic COVID-19 vaccine. So let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report. You know, HealthyCell is a terrific lineup of products. They have products that are pill-free, gel-pack vitamins. Looking for better sleep, focus, and energy? Check out HealthyCell, the leading innovator in nutritional supplements for cell health. Are you tired of being tired? Healthy Cell has a product that helps REM sleep, helps you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM sleep supplement. The only sleep supplement that's designed to support all stages of sleep. And boy, is it needed now during all the stress of the COVID-19 pandemic. So go to healthycell.com and use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for a 20% off your first order of any product from Healthy Cell. I use them every day. I believe in them, and you should too. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report.
Well, there was a time when Americans could rely on the Fourth Estate. Well, in these challenging times, the media is both reckless and complicit. AmericaOutLoud.com. Top analysis from leading experts, articles, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report, and I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. It's my great pleasure to welcome to the show Dr. Eleftherios Goukalas. Dr. Goukalas received his bachelor's degree in applied mathematics from the California Institute of Technology, and then he went on to the University of Washington in Seattle and received his master's and PhD in applied mathematics at that prestigious university. He's held multiple posts, including work done at the University of Central Florida, and now he's a professor in South Texas, and I've invited him on the show because he's originally from Greece. He's keeping track of his family in Greece, and he's in South Texas, where many of you know the largest proportion of the population is Hispanic, and I want his insights as a citizen and someone who's really involved in the COVID-19 pandemic to give us his viewpoint here on the show. Dr. Goukalas, welcome to the McCullough Report.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit about what your current position is in South Texas.
My position, I work here as a professor of mathematics. And now in terms of the position, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I understand the question, honestly.
Right. And so you're a professor there at the university, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, very good. Has the COVID-19 pandemic, has it influenced your community there in South Texas?
Well, I think it influenced just about everybody. From my standpoint, what happened is that when the whole thing first broke out, it was in the middle of the spring break. That was 1 week long spring break. And then they extended it to another break because the university was trying to figure out what to do. Then they went into remote teaching mode. That extra week actually helped me to finish up some teaching preparation I was doing. So it worked for me, but it was then after that, we went to remote teaching, we scrambled, we got that done. And we are actually under lockdown. I guess people have this idea that in Texas, we didn't really lock down, but we actually did lock down here for about a month. And then eventually I think the governor gave his executive orders and opened up the state and, you know, forced all the local county judges, et cetera, here to open us up. Now, what happened is we've been doing remote teaching up until now. I think that this is a semester, the first semester where we started actually doing in-class teaching. Now, in terms of what happened between now and then, one thing that I know is that early on, I was trying to figure out for myself, that's how I got involved into this in the first place, is I was trying to figure out how I'm going to protect myself. I realized early on that we were not exactly getting the truth necessarily from the powers that be. I learned about Dr. Zelenko and, you know, his therapies. I actually followed his early interviews. He gave these interviews with Rabbi Aryeh Kadzin, he pretty much explained what was going on. And that got me interested into all this. But the my initial impression was that Dr. Zelenko's treatment would be actually adopted within maybe a couple of months. It would take maybe the government a couple of months to realize that they should be doing this. And then maybe by June or July, it would be all over. Except this didn't happen. So now what did happen, though, that was interesting is that apparently, and I found this out many months later, is that locally there are doctors who are aware of, maybe not directly through Dr. Zelenko, but through Paul Marek. So you may recall around the same time, Paul Marek also put out his treatment protocol. And very early on, I think around neighborhood of April or May, he was actually recommending doctors to use hydroxychloroquine. So actually it turns out that the doctor I've been going to since 2008 was one of the three doctors that signed a letter that was organized by Jenny, I think was Dr. Elizabeth Vliet, and may have been one or two other people involved, but that was a letter that was signed by more than 700 doctors from all across the United States. And it was sent to Donald Trump, then President Donald Trump, telling him that he needs to use executive orders to make sure hydroxychloroquine becomes available to the public to use for COVID-19, because you may remember that for the time period between April, May, June, one of the problems at that time generally was that across several states, the governors of those states were trying to suppress access to hydroxychloroquine. And several doctors signed that letter. So when I found this letter sometime in the summer, I ran a copy of that letter. It was on the AAPS website. And when I went through it, I said, let me see if there's any doctors from my area. So I identified three doctors. So there were three doctors from my area that actually signed the letter. There was also one other doctor that does eye laser surgery. So I'm not sure exactly what his involvement is in this, but obviously he's an open-minded, smart guy. And one of those three doctors is actually the doctor I've been going to ever since I came here. So back in 2008, you know, I was looking for a doctor, you know, if I get a bacterial infection or something, where I'm going to go. So I just randomly went on Google Maps and I was trying to find a doctor that's open, you know, during the night, like a night clinic. So, you know, after I do all my teaching and everything and have my dinner, I can then go to a doctor if I'm sick. So I just randomly picked that guy back in 2008. And then it turns out that guy was actually one of the three doctors that was open-minded enough and vocal enough to write a letter, to sign that letter to President Trump. So that was like, okay, so I guess one, I'm lucky. And two, I picked a really good doctor. So
let me ask you, just to clarify for listeners, what city are you in Texas?
I live very close to Edinburgh, Texas. So technically I'm outside of the city limits, but that's the closest city to my location.
So give the listeners an idea. Edinburgh, and that's closest to, what's the big closest city?
Well, there's three big sort of, well, not big exactly, but let's say the three largest, there's McAllen, there is Harlingen, there's Brownsville. So we're close to McAllen. So we're basically north from McAllen, Texas.
And how close are you to the Mexican border?
It depends exactly where you are, but it's a question of minutes. So it can be anything 30 minutes, 20 minutes, 10 minutes. It depends exactly where you are. It also depends on the traffic, mm-hmm. but it's just a question of maybe a dozen miles from the border.
So is it your impression down in South Texas that people who got COVID did get hydroxychloroquine and did get the other drugs or no?
I don't know. I know from statistics that I've seen the statistics recently that we have a case fatality rate of 3%. It's in the neighborhood of 3%. So that seems to be a little bit high. Now, it could be related to the profile of the people here, maybe the comorbidities and all that. Now, I know that aside from those three doctors that I mentioned, I've been, you know, every time I run into people, I tell them, you know, by the way, you guys, you know, that there's early treatment, et cetera. And I just randomly mention this to people. I say I go to a restaurant, et cetera. And oftentimes, you know, people are either interested, but now they started telling me, oh, I know about it. Yes, or I had COVID and this doctor gave me ivermectin or whatever. And I ask him, who's your doctor? And like every time I hear a different name. So it looks like there's also an underground. There's some doctors that also do this, but, you know, you don't necessarily know who they are.
Is there a problem with immigrants coming across the border with COVID that you know about?
I don't have direct knowledge, but I wouldn't be surprised if there is cross-border traffic and if some people from the other side of the border decide to come here thinking that our hospital care might be better than what they have down there.
You know, they showed me a video one time on TV, and they showed all the immigrants coming across, and they said there was a 15% rate of COVID, but yet they were running and they had masks on. I said, well, listen, you know, if they're outside and they're not contributing to the hospitalizations, you know, they're going to have some natural immunity. I don't know what to say about it. You know, I think the concern is in certain places, you know, in truck stops and rest stops and bathrooms, public restrooms, this is probably where there's a lot of transmission. Yeah. Have you seen vaccine discrimination in your community?
I haven't seen anything directly yet. Honestly, I mean, you can go to any store you want and nobody wants to know if you're vaccinated or not. You can go, you can do your shopping, you can go to restaurants. So I haven't seen any of that. Now, there's the question of vaccine mandates by employers. Now, we hear from all across the state that private employers, some private employers are trying to mandate vaccines. I know that universities, now public universities cannot mandate at the moment vaccines that are under the executive use authorization due to the order by the governor, but it looks like they have a desire to do so. That's sort of my impression. So, and now with the recent news was about a week ago that we heard that the so-called Pfizer vaccine was authorized, got FDA approval, which of course, then when we look at the language of the approval, it's a little bit strange. It looks like the university at the beginning of the week told us about the news, all of this happened, and then they'll tell us, we'll update you about what this means, and we still haven't received an update. So it looks like that the lawyers are still thinking it over about what it actually means. And
have there been any school outbreaks?
I don't have direct knowledge of any outbreaks, meaning I don't know somebody personally that had COVID. It's possible that somebody that I know personally had it and didn't tell me. I did hear, generally speaking, that employees had COVID, that on some occasions, for example, you know, that there were some people, like maybe staff that were on campus, and then like this office or that office had to close for a week because somebody had COVID, and then all the people in that office had to quarantine. So it happened, but for up until the fall semester, I mean, the technically all of us were working remotely. The students were attending courses remotely, and I was working remotely. So most of us were working remotely. So whatever happened same way it happens for everybody else.
But did the students go home, or did many of them stay in their apartments and dorms and houses?
I don't know. So, because, but in general, the majority of the students commute from home. We have some dorms, but the majority are actually at home, and okay, they drive from home to class.
Because I had some insight. I had a student from the University of Texas in Austin, and I was talking to him. He said, oh, yeah, we closed the school, and we did all the classes by WebEx. He said, but all of us, we rented apartments. We already had our commitments, so we just stayed there in Austin. I said, okay. I said, well, what happened then? Well, after we were done with WebEx, we went out and played basketball and softball, and we did sports, and then we went to restaurants, and we went to bars and fraternity parties and everything else. And I was like, well, what's the purpose? I mean, you just had some classes on WebEx and everything else was the same in terms of the university experience. It didn't seem like it was that productive in terms of lockdown. So this whole idea that There were never any school outbreaks. There were actually never any hospital outbreaks or dental clinic outbreaks. The only places where there were documented outbreaks were nursing homes. And to me, it made sense that nursing homes, maybe nursing home workers, but outside of that, to try to close down everything else. And you mentioned quarantining for 2 weeks. If someone is not symptomatic, they can't pass it to someone else. So you don't have to shut down these offices. It's just, you know, if someone's sick, they should go home. And then if somebody else gets sick,
A question that has come up when I mentioned this to some colleagues was that if somebody is, the counter argument is, well, if somebody is pre-symptomatic, then the transmission probability increases. And then obviously when you're symptomatic, then obviously that's where it's maximum. But I guess the question I have is, maybe you can tell me this, when someone is pre-symptomatic, do they know that they are pre-symptomatic, or is it they can't tell the difference between pre-symptomatic and asymptomatic? So like, if I am currently pre-symptomatic, will I know that I'm pre-symptomatic? How can you tell?
No, the idea is you don't know, but it doesn't matter because you really don't spread it during the pre-symptomatic phase. You only spread it during the symptomatic phase. So you know, the paper by Cao, that was really good. They took 10 million people. They looked in everybody, they swabbed in sequences, and out of 10 million, they found 300 that they were sure had no symptoms, and they actually were able to find the virus that really sequenced, they had the virus, and then they followed what happened. And they didn't get sick, they were forming antibodies, things of this nature. So the idea is we only need to remove sick people from the workplace. We should be careful and not have sick kids go to school, sick professors. We should have flexible work schedules, but we can't outsmart the virus. All these attempts to try to lock down, hold people out of offices, you can see these epidemic curves. These epidemic curves seem to be relentless. And I mean, look at Israel. Israel right now, their epidemic curve post-vaccination is just as high as pre-vaccination. It's as if none of these measures made a difference whatsoever. So anyhow, well, listen, this is great. Do you have any more final words for our audience? We learned about South Texas, and you're at the University of Texas at the Rio Grande Valley. Is that right?
I think, yes, that's correct.
Okay, great.
So, well, final thought, I mean, obviously, what I decided to do personally is to just take hydroxychloroquine and zinc as a prophylaxis, since I'm now teaching in the classroom. And I studied it several months earlier, actually. And that's what everybody could have done from the very beginning. I think we knew about prophylaxis as early as, I forget the exact month, but I think Dr. Zelenko was talking about it as early as about April or May, somewhere around that neighborhood. So by June, we could have made up our mind that we should do that. And then we could have just done that and then open everything up.
Well, I had an investigational new drug application on the very end of March for once weekly hydroxychloroquine, because the Indian Medical Council in India had already just blanket recommended it. So we did it at our hospital as part of a protocol. We had a control group and an active group, and it did reduce rates of new infection. But the problem was the testing was not as good early on. There became all kinds of concerns that hydroxychloroquine may not be safe. And so people complained to our IRB. And we've been delayed for over a year, actually a year and a half, in getting this paper published. And it just goes to show you the frustration that we have in the literature on any type of medical treatment for COVID-19. But I tell you, I think we're going to leave it there. Dr. Gouliakos, thank you so much for joining us on the McCullough Report. And it's great to have you a part of our team on this dialogue of how do we respond to the pandemic. It always seems like there's some new piece of information or new news that we need to respond to. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report.
Well, there was a time when Americans could rely on the Fourth Estate. Well, in these challenging times, the media is both reckless and complicit. AmericaOutLoud.com. Top analysis from leading experts, articles, podcasts, video, and 24/7 talk radio. America. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control labeled insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support, delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Let's get real, let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report, and I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. I have an unusual interview for our program this week, and I want to explain it to you. I've been closely communicating with a wonderful gentleman who is in Ho Chi Minh City, formerly Saigon in Vietnam. Now, he's an American national, but he has important insights for our listeners with respect to what's going on in Vietnam with respect to COVID-19 pandemic, and he's been gracious enough to come on the show, but would like to remain anonymous and will remain anonymous, and he's going to give us our insights. I can tell you that I'll just give him the anonymous name of CC, Concerned Citizen. He grew up in the United States. He received his bachelor's degree at the University of Buffalo in mechanical engineering. He has worked around the world, primarily in Southeast Asia, though, on mechanical and nuclear boiler inspections. He is now in complete lockdown in Ho Chi Minh City. And I really want to give him the floor to briefly describe what it's like to be a U.S. national, but be outside the United States, in a sense, stuck in a lockdown. So, CC, welcome to the McCullough Report.
Thank you, Dr. McCullough. It's my honor and pleasure to be with you.
Okay, well, you have the floor. Tell us what is going on with respect to someone like you who is trying to navigate outside the United States, but in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic. Tell us what's going on.
Well, just briefly, as COVID erupted primarily over in the States, it was fairly quiet here in Vietnam. For whatever reasons, the controls, luck, whatever you have. But in the last 4 months in all of Asia, as you know, it spiked quite a bit, and it spiked considerably high here in Saigon. It's kind of like the epicenter of Vietnam. So since June, that's when the schools end here, June 1st, they put a lockdown on a lot of things. The first lockdown was you could go out, but it was limited to one or two people. They had the distance spacing. You were limited to go shopping at the food marts or like maybe banking or anything medical.
But how were you limited? How did they limit you in doing that?
Well, they had police around. Okay, so there's police everywhere. Now there's military. I'll get to that in a minute. But they you would get tickets, and they're not shy or bashful about issuing tickets. And for the good of the cause, people were respectful of that. There weren't a lot of people running around doing it. So in that respect, they're very good about it. What's happened as it's spiked, and there was up to like 4,500 cases a day here in Ho Chi Minh, they went through a lockdown. Now, I live in a condo area in Saigon, and we had, it's a 43-story building. We had a couple cases in our building, and they actually locked this building down. We couldn't go out. We couldn't go out for, it was over a week. You couldn't go anywhere. They had people that would bring in food. You could call the local, there's a few stores here. They would bring in the food, but you couldn't go out. that passed. They allowed us to go back out, but soon after, they locked down the whole city again. And now it's they got the military here, primarily to keep order and to make sure nobody's going out. But they're also assisting with, you know, those humanitarian things, like making sure people are getting food. We're lucky, but there's a lot of people here, very poor people, who are having a really rough time with getting food and surviving because you can't work. How are they going to? They live paycheck to paycheck. So they have issued the varied COVID vaccines. Mm-hmm. And we didn't sign up for it yet. I'm still very apprehensive. Thank you for that. Those who have signed up for it, they've gotten at least one shot, maybe two. And it's you can't select which version of the vaccine you wish to have.
Which ones do they have there?
Well, they have Moderna, they have Pfizer. They have the Sinovac. Mm-hmm. China just donated a whole bunch. I don't know the number, a couple million maybe. Mm-hmm. To come through China, from China. And I thought the U.S. was going to donate another 100,000, but I'm not sure if that was overridden by the donation from the Chinese. It's hard to keep up with all the information because it's always changing. And unfortunately, much like our homeland, you can't be sure that information you're getting is accurate.
So right now it's elective whether or not you take the vaccine.
It is, and I'm not sure where that's going to go. Both me and my wife are apprehensive about getting it, whether we get a knock on the door and saying, you know, you either take the shot or we're sending you out of the country. I just don't know. I don't know what's going to be. They haven't gotten there yet.
If you were to look down in the street and you're in a nice condo complex that is nearby, actually a pretty well-known medical facility called Vinn Medical Center in the complex. If we were to look down on the street, are the streets pretty empty down there?
Oh yeah, it's dead silence. This is a pretty robust city. And again, it's the majority of the transportation is done by motorbike. So it's pretty robust. 24/7. And I just said that when I was going out to hang some towels out there. I went, I can't believe how quiet it is out here.
And this has been going on for months now, at least 2 or 3 months.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, since June, since the beginning of June, we haven't been out. I mean, my son's summer vacation's over with. Now he's back to doing online schooling. Mm-hmm. And now they're talking about any child over 12 will have to get the vaccine. Fortunately, my son's not there yet.
How do you think Vietnam is with respect to following the U.S.? Do you think the U.S. is kind of setting the standards, or is it the U.K. or EU?
It's hard for me to gauge that. Again, they were very good about trying to prevent it here. I don't think people like you are getting over here. If I were to voice any of that second guessing of the vaccines, I could be thrown in jail over here for that.
Have they made that clear? Have they made that clear to people?
Yes, absolutely. It's a 7-year. I've actually read that. 7 years, you will go to jail if they find you providing COVID information that doesn't meet, you know, their narrative. Similar to Facebook, right? We get those on Facebook. Mm-hmm. It's a little scary. I would love to be able to educate people, but you know, I can't put my family in harm's way.
Right. So I've heard that from another doctor in Vietnam who reached out, who's distressed. And I did hear that number, 7 years in jail. So he felt as if he had any discussion about vaccine safety or allergic reactions or other things with the vaccine, he felt pretty clearly that he could be put in jail. There in Vietnam for that. You would agree with that if a doctor came out and said, listen, I'm concerned about the safety of vaccines, that doctor?
Yes. Yes, definitely. For sure.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Well, this is CC. This has been a wonderful interview. It's a bit disturbing to, certainly more than a bit disturbing to hear about how things are evolving over time. How can the economy and all the busy street life and all of that, how can that come to a complete stop and have that go for months? How is this going to end?
I don't have a crystal ball, Doc. It can't be good. I mean, as I indicated, these people live from paycheck to paycheck, and it's not a lot. You know, the government has donated food and rice and those things, maybe even small money, but it can't continue. I suspect that the current lockdown is till September 15th, but because of the number of cases going on, I don't see that stopping on September 15th. My guess, it will continue until the end of September. But again, that's just a scientific guess.
Are you aware that the vaccines may fail and people get vaccinated and still get COVID?
Oh, absolutely. I've been following you. Thank you very much. I don't have much to do these days, so I spend an awful lot of time on the internet. And I've been fortunate enough to share you with a lot of family and friends that have been very thankful for it. But yeah, absolutely. I'm fully aware of all the negatives about it, which is why we right now, unless they tie me down, I'm not taking it.
Yeah, it's possible that the vaccines may not work. And certainly the data suggests they're not safe, at least not safe for everyone. We've been impressed with this paper by Chow and colleagues out of Ho Chi Minh City in a unit of Oxford that had the healthcare workers fully vaccinated with the AstraZeneca vaccine, and then they locked down the hospital, consistent with what you're telling us, in June. They didn't let the workers come out, and then the workers started spreading COVID to one another. It was all the Delta variant, and the calculation of the viral load in the nose and mouth was 251 times that of those with other variants in the pre-vaccinated era. Now, when this hit the internet, we were roundly criticized, saying, listen, it wasn't an apples-to-apples comparison. And and in this dialogue, a paper was brought forward by an author, Li and colleagues out of Guangzhou, China, saying, looky here, with a Delta variant, they can carry 1,000-fold more virus in the nose and the mouth. So the claim was made that it's not the vaccine that's promoting it, it's Delta. And we look carefully at the paper from Guangzhou, China, which is in preprint, and it made no mention of the vaccine. So then we looked in that region of China, and 80% of people are vaccinated. So we're making the case that, listen, the authors are going to have to come clean and tell us on those who have 1,000-fold increased viral load, were they vaccinated? And maybe the Li paper probably fully supports the Chow paper, that in this era with the Delta variant, these vaccinated people are carrying massive viral loads, and then they're infecting everybody else, driving the pandemic. So there is a line of thinking suggesting the vaccines are actually making this worse. If we didn't have the vaccines, we could have treated our way out of it.
Right. And it is the Delta variant that's prominent here, at least in Ho Chi Minh, but it is spreading. I mean, there are other cases that are north, and my wife's family's down in southern Vietnam, and they're right now, they're on similar lockdown that we are. You know, the schools are closed, people can't work. So it's not just Saigon, but this is the epicenter for sure.
Okay. Well, listen, CC, this has been a great interview. Thank you so much for joining us on the McCullough Report. Stay safe in Ho Chi Minh City, formerly Saigon, Vietnam.
Thank you for everything you do, Doc. Thank you so much.
Well, let's get real. Let's get loud on America Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report.